Welcome to Life Lab with David Ponder and Zach Schaefer. We are the podcast of Experience Experiments.
We give you those experiments via change challenges at the end of each episode.
We created this podcast because we wanted to talk about important topics that can help us all live meaningful lives.
You might agree with what we have to say, or you might disagree. But the point there is that you get something new to think about.
There's no edits and no gimmicks. Our entire point is to help you take action and live a better life.
You only get one life to live, so you may as well make the most of it. Good morning. Welcome to Life Lab. I'm going to jump right in, because today we're talking about something that's weird. We're talking about abnormal psychology.
Oh, what brain did you give me? It was Abby something. Yeah, Abby what? Abby normal. I watched the Young Frankenstein clip to get prepared for this. And I think it captures perfectly what psychologists have primed us to think the word abnormal means. And that is bad. Scary. Psychotic.
Wrong. Something wrong.
Correct. Correct. You love definitions. Did you look up any?
I did. I liked the one, surprisingly enough, that Wikipedia had. It said that abnormal psychology is the branch of psychology that studies unusual patterns of behavior, emotion, and thought, which could possibly be understood as a mental disorder. I liked it because I liked the word unusual.
Yeah, I'd just say, I mean, the word itself means moving away from being standard, expected, or typical. So for me, I'll just cut to it. My main point this whole episode is to cultivate an abnormal psychology, to take back the negative connotation and to go against the grain of how everybody thinks, how the mob thinks, but in a positive way. It doesn't have to be negative in that sense.
It's funny that you say that because I went the same direction. I didn't say – when I was thinking about it and doing my notes, I wasn't taking it from a perspective of take it back. I was just doing it from a perspective of like, what is normal?
Exactly.
You right. know what I mean? Like,
well, and that's the whole society we live in is everyone's challenging everything about what is normal. And I agree with that at a high level.
So here's one thing that I wouldn't mind doing. I wouldn't mind talking about it. So if we're gonna do the positive stuff about it, like,
we can do the negative because there's clearly a negative side. Right. I'm not saying there's not a truly negative, worrying, or undesirable side. Obviously there is.
Right.
I just think that I wake up every day and I didn't think of that phrase, but I'm going to now moving forward cultivate an abnormal psychology, man. Absolutely. I like that phrase.
Okay.
Which is abnormal in itself.
I'm on board with that. I think I'm on board with that. You know, the thing is, when you think about having a psychological disorder, an abnormal psychology, there's obviously negative connotation. And the reason that there's negative connotation is because there are some abnormalities, psychological abnormalities that are clearly negative, right? And so, but it doesn't mean that they're so abnormal, and I'll get to that. But, you know, we're talking about, like, depression.
Right.
You know, anxiety disorders. Like, if you read, one of the things that struck me was how many clinically diagnosable psychological disorders there are. And it's like, well, it's no wonder, like, there's autism spectrum, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, manias, depressions, anxiety disorders, of which there are like 7 listed here, stress-related disorders, adjustment disorders, post-traumatic disorders, reactive attachment disorder, dissociative – I'm not even through the Ds – dissociative identity disorder.
Well, there's an entire manual, the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Mental Disorders, created in the 1960s with the whole point of categorizing an entire encyclopedia
a lexicon, a vocabulary, a statistical and methodological approach to figuring out why humans are fucked in the head and how we can fix them, being psychologists, psychiatrists.
Right. And my point was like, so some of the, they categorize these, right? Like there's eating disorders, anorexia and bulimia and all this stuff. And there's sleep disorders, narcolepsy and insomnia. And there's, we talked about anxiety. We talked about depression. And then you've got these, you know, disruptive disorders like kleptomania, pyromania, all that stuff. So clearly there are some that it's just like, all right, when we talk about cultivating an abnormal psychology.
Yeah, I'm not talking about those things. Right. But those things are someone has become powerless over the behaviors associated with that quote-unquote disorder they have. And so their life has become unmanageable. So they literally need to seek out help to restore the order. I think it's important to think of the word disorder. We just use that word, disorder, disorder. Disorder, apart from order, apart from being organized appropriately as expected by society. That's important. Everything we do in society, every structure we make, everything we do in our relationships, it's really all about order. We need order in our lives. And so if that order is disrupted, that's not good. Get the people back in line. And so what psychologists have done is they just need to make sure they label it. And
that's right.
Come
that's,
up with a whole series right. of behaviors. But like you said, there's very real things. I'm not downplaying that. That's just not where my kind of focus went. Immediately, I went to, ooh, yeah, that I like that. I want to have an abnormal right. psychology.
Well, see, it's funny because there's like a fine line that you got to walk between, you know, being a pyromaniac and burning your neighbor's yes. house down.
Yes.
The type of disorder.
Right.
And being Tom Cruise, who's dangerous. I don't want him to be my wingman. He's a loose cannon, right?
Or like Ryan Holiday's books. Like, that's abnormal psychology. Most people do not want to go embrace the obstacle. They want to run from the obstacle. That's normal psychology. Ooh, that's hard. Let's sit down and take a break. No, it's raining out. That's when you go run 10 miles.
Yeah.
That's an abnormal psychology, but that's where winners come from and success comes from and grit is created.
That's an intentional abnormal psychology.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. And my whole point was we have abnormal psychologies that are glorified, right? Like Maverick and Top Gun, right? He's just
goes against the grain.
He goes against the grain. He takes risks. He doesn't fall in line. He's a little bit out of order, right? Mm-hmm. But he's a little unpredictable. You got to watch that guy. Where on the flip side, perfect order, perfectly predictable. That's what the opposite of what Maverick would be in that situation. And then let's take it even further than Maverick. You've got people that are just stealing shit all day.
Or murdering people. Yeah, Ted Bundy, like go watch those movies they've redone recently about him, or go watch some of the original footage of him, right. You know, defending himself in court based on all those horrific crimes he committed. That's a real abnormal psychology. Right. And that's not the kind I'm talking about cultivating. Let me make that clear.
That's not Maverick and Top Gun.
Right.
They're not going to glorify that one in a movie. So, yeah, exactly. So my point is, yes, like, let's talk about cultivating. Well, let's think about what abnormal psychology is versus, like, just being perfectly orderly in your mental health.
Well,
right?
You mentioned a word I want to hit on, a really famous intellectual, if you will. His name's Kenneth Burke. One of the things he wrote about was that humans are the creator of perfection, the concept of that. And he said, we're rotten with perfection. Everything we're doing is we're trying to strive for perfection. All the media we surround ourselves with, it's fake. It's mediated. It's like, oh, I need to look this way or do this. Like, we just constantly are trying to become perfect or normal. And I think that just, that's a neurosis in and of itself.
Yeah, that might cause some of the
I'm sure there's actually a label about. For that, whatever that is. there's a term
there's
for
probably
that.
A disorder. A supernormality disorder.
Right. I just need to be super normal. My goal is to be super average, right in the middle.
What would you think is normal in this situation? Because that's exactly what I want to do. I can't act until I hear
what's
normal.
Another word for normal is average. So if you want to become, I need to just be normal. Be average. Be totally forgettable.
That's true. So let's say this, all right? So we're downing on normality here a little bit. We're downing on mental order. I will say this. So I read an article by maybe one of your long-lost relatives, Jonathan D. Schaefer.
Oh, Johnny D. Uncle John.
Spelled the same, by the way.
Uncle John.
He's a doctoral student of clinical psychology at Duke. So I would assume that's a pretty good program. And he basically talked about mental health and how the people who never get diagnosed with mental health at any phase of their life do appear to have a higher probability of reporting like life satisfaction. Like they score higher on life satisfaction. So, so I will say that like there is something to be said for having, like you said, average on when it comes to mental order. I mean, it can tend to be, there are some positive associations with it. Now, with that said, let me flip around and say the whole reason I'm referencing this guy. He said he did a study with like 1,000 participants. And in that study, only 17% failed to meet criteria for one or more common mental disorders across all the – they did 6 different assessment phases. So of the remaining 83%, so 83% at some point in their life were associated with some sort of disorder. Half met the criteria for one or more. The remainder met the criteria for 3 or more. And basically it says the typical human experience is that you have at least one brush with a quote-unquote diagnosable disorder.
Yeah, no shit, because they create 10 million.
Right. I'm sitting with my legs crossed. Oh, he's got right-crossed-legged disorder.
That's why I read that.
Oh, that says something about how he grew up with his parent. It's so silly.
Yeah.
To me, that's, I always think of the baseball acronym. If everyone in the major league is hitting home runs and you're like, man, everyone's hitting them. Yeah, because they're hitting off of a high school pitcher. Like if you set the system up, it doesn't make sense.
Right.
And but then people take that in and they view these people as experts and I am now diagnosed. Now I have to do things or take drugs to make me better and make me right. I don't like that.
I think this is something people should be aware of because – I mean, obviously, this study shows it out. 83% of people are diagnosed with a mental disorder. Like, think about that. So that's normal. It's abnormal not to be diagnosed with a mental disorder.
Right.
And then second, even the CDC website. So this was just one Duke study, right, that I'm talking about the 83%. But I just came across the CDC website, and right there on the front page of the psychology part, it talks about – or of the mental health part, it says more than 50% will be diagnosed with a mental illness or disorder at some point in their lifetime. It's like, okay. So then why is it so stigmatized? Like why do we – you know, oh, he's got a mental disorder. Like, well, yeah, well, you well, do because, too, because, and she does too.
Because mental health is stigmatized. That goes to mental health field in general, which clearly psychology is a part of, or a part of the mind, how we do our thinking, because it's abstract, and our brains are not hardwired to think in the abstract. Now, you're blessed. Your brain was blessed to do so as an analytical person, but it's easy for us to see a severed arm and be like, oh, okay, we know how to fix that. It's tough to see someone who doesn't have what we would say the willpower, the effort to get out of bed every day because they're depressed. We don't know how to deal with that as well. And so then when we label it and then obviously we medicate it and come up with a series of therapies to help it out, that feels, you know, good and like action is being taken. And that's very helpful in my opinion. But in general, we don't have as clear of systems to talk about or deal with mental health. Couple that with our need for instant gratification and instant change, no wonder why we over-medicate ourselves to solve our psychology problems, our mind problems through medication, which, again, I'm not a huge fan of. That creates more problems.
Right. Well, and I think it goes down to when we were opening the show and we were talking about how, look, like if you're going to be just normal and average, like, well, what kind of excitement is there in life around that, right? Like, you probably are going to be different than most people. You're going to have, quote-unquote, disorder in some way in your mental state throughout life. Chances are that's going to happen. And we're talking about, like, well, at least try to be aware of it, right? That's everything that we do in Life Lab, right? Be aware of these emotions that you have and your thoughts and try to direct them and make them productive and all of that stuff. So try to at least – if you're going to have a disorder, try to like make the best of it basically. Try to use it for good.
As fuel.
As fuel for like exactly my example, right? Like I don't know what disorder you would give Maverick. He's obviously like egotistical, so narcissistic disorder and some other shit too, right? Like he's putting those around him in danger, you know, and mm-hmm. stuff like that, right? So clearly some disorder there. But it works out in his favor as a jet pilot, as a right. fighter pilot, you know, and clearly becomes glorified in that movie. And so
insecurity, anxiety, you know, it can either paralyze you and make you neurotic, worrying about every little thing, or that can be like, you know what, I'm not as good. Damn right. That's why I got to get out earlier and practice harder.
So it's all about, it goes back to good old Viktor Frankl. It's all about your response then, right?
Well, dialing back. Yeah. The behavior.
So it's all about, well, first it's about awareness. Sure. A lot of people go through life without self-awareness.
Most people. Yeah, there was a lot there, a lot of good things to unpack. It makes me think of Warren Buffett. Don't ask the barber if you need a haircut. If you think you got a problem, you go talk to a psychologist. Guess what? You don't have a problem. You've got 20 problems, and I'm going to cure them. But we need to schedule about a year's worth of sessions and take these pills. And not that those things are bad. They could very well help you. They are in the business of identifying and labeling disorders. Just go look up. Here's a fun thing. Go try in person, not online, because you won't appreciate it. Go to a library and look at the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Mental Disorders, which has only been created since the 1960s. Go look at how big that thing is. And then try to find one that's equally the same size for positive traits, what's called positive psychology. Not trying to fix and repair where we're fucked as humans, but to recognize where we're positive, where we can build and create fulfilling lives, focusing on people's strengths and not just their weaknesses. That didn't even exist until 2004, when a guy named Martin Seligman created the Character Strengths and Values Manual. He was trying to do the same thing for folks, but focus on the positive things. People don't understand. That's a paradigm shift. That is a big difference. And we have trained ourselves, humans, probably coming out of evolutionary biology, it's easier for us to think of the bad things and the danger to protect ourselves for survival. But I think the flourishing and growth of our species will come from the positive side of things and focusing on where we're great and acknowledging I got these other abnormal things going on, but I got to deal with them. But I need to focus on where I'm unbelievable and where I am abnormal and unique in a positive way. That's what's going to take us to the next planets and integrate us with robots and all the shit that's going to happen whether we want it to or not.
So it can – am I right in saying – because here's where my thought's going with this is like it's all about the outcome, right? So like we probably all are going to be abnormal in some way, right? So whether it be through any number of these disorders that we just read, probably have more than one of them, right? And a combination of those will have strengths and weaknesses, right? We'll have some clear problems and we'll have some clear strengths. The trick is using your unique blend of
you
and using it to the best that you can possibly use it. You know what I mean? Like
use the negative. And again, I understand if you've had horrible trauma, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about kind of an average upbringing where, you know,
right.
The traumas, right. Yeah. The really, if you think of psychology on a person's life on a continuum, I'm not talking about the extremes here. I'm trying to focus on
that's
general people in the middle here, right? But if you can take those things you've experienced, dad did this when I was a little, or mom, and you use it as fuel. That's not easy. That takes discipline to cultivate that kind. That is an abnormal psychology. But if you can do that and make those what could be perceived as weaknesses or flaws as strengths, that's where superpowers come from.
You know what? That's a really important. There's two important things that you said there that I want to call out.
Wow.
Number one.
Two and one. Twofer.
Yeah, well, two that I noticed. There's probably more, but there were two that I noticed. One of them is that we're not talking about extremes here. You can have debilitating disorders that make you so different from whatever's considered normal that you can't operate.
You can't function
in society. You can't function. And so obviously if we're talking about – when we're saying to embrace the ones that you recognize that you have and try to make the most of them, it has to lay within the median somewhere so that you can function in society, obviously. So that's one thing that I thought was really important there. And the second thing that was really important there was you used the word superpower, right? And so I can – here's an extreme example. We're talking about being in the media, and now I'm going right to extreme. But here's an extreme example. In the movie Rain Man, Raymond has the ability to count cards. He can memorize numbers like crazy. And so they take that disorder and they use it for a positive in Vegas and count cards, right, and game the system. Now, he's got clear deficiencies in other areas that make him non-functional without help. But that's an extreme example, I think, of what we're talking about, where if you're in the median range where you're a functional person with quirks just like everybody else is, right, it's figuring out which of your quirks are more like repeating yourself 1,000 times over the same thing like Raymond, a clear deficiency, versus being able to remember numbers, you know, a clear power. Mm-hmm. Identifying both of those types of things within yourself, having self-awareness of those things, and then trying to determine, like, trying to drive an outcome in your life.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. You had mentioned something earlier. What was the phrase? I can't recall, but it made me think of three things. Context. Context is really king for this because, again, we all have a psychology. Think of it on a continuum from normal to outliers. Normal, so to speak, being closer to the middle. Well, what context are you talking about? The thing in, the behaviors or the thought patterns in, that gives and colors the meaning of it. So if you take an abnormal psychological trait or thinking pattern, how you think through things, and you put it in a different setting, that can be really bad or it can be really powerful. So context really adds flavor and meaning to what we're talking about, in my opinion. Because I have some real abnormal psychological patterns for how I think about things, and it's crazy, and I wouldn't even want to share them on here. But I know how to use them, and it really helps me out. But if I take that and I try to take those same patterns when my kid's involved in some activity, that would be like psychotic abnormal and not a good thing. Does that make sense?
No, it makes total sense. It makes total sense. Yeah, it's all about context. It's almost like your ability to – it's like your – is it like this? Let me ask. Is it like your ability to use language correctly? So curse words, mm-hmm. right, can be very powerful. They're considered abnormal, yeah. right? They are outliers when it comes to the rest of language. But if you know how to use them in the right context, they can be very powerful.
Very powerful and provocative, and yeah, absolutely.
And misuse can be very dangerous, just like you talked about.
Yeah. Yeah, again, a lot of this does come back to self-awareness. Let's reiterate, we're not talking about the outliers here. There's a lot of debilitating, true disorders, illnesses that people have. I'm not thinking of any of that stuff. I'm thinking of the average human going to their job day to day. If they met with a psychologist every day, the psychologist would say, here's the 30 things wrong with you. And I say, hogwash. Sure, some of that stuff might be there. How can you use those things as fuel to craft and design the type of life you want to that's fulfilling for you and fulfilling for the people around you?
Yeah. A lot of really huge ideas that we talk about over and over on the show converge here, I think, when we're talking about, okay, coming to a good understanding of self-awareness of your disorders, you know, so to speak, and trying to drive the most positive outcome for them. Obviously, there's, you know, emotional intelligence and all of these things. But like I mentioned the Viktor Frankl quote, because viewing the world as things that happen to you is one way is a trap, right? Like you just have to understand, like the world, time's going to go on. Things are going to happen. Who cares why it happened or whatever? A lot of people are like, do the why me thing. The bottom line is understanding your emotions, your thoughts, and trying to direct them, choosing your response, right? That's a key thing that we talk about every day here that I think comes into play, you know, very strongly when we're talking about being self-aware, understanding your strengths and weaknesses, knowing you're prone to feel a certain way, knowing you're prone for certain thoughts, and understanding how to handle those. So another one would be the serenity prayer, right? Understanding what you do and do not control, right? Because when it comes to disorders, a lot of times I think they can center around control, right? The want of control, the desire of control. Last episode, I can't remember what the topic was, but we talked about magical thinking. Do you remember that? We talked about
expectations.
Yeah. So for expectations, yeah. We talked about magical thinking where children envision something happening and they think that then they're manifesting it in the world. So like they don't like a kid or they're mad at one of their kids on the playground. Mm-hmm. So they envision him tripping and he does. And they incorrectly attribute that to their imagination of him tripping caused him to trip. We can do that same thing with mental disorders as an adult. It's not like that completely goes away. We might dial it back a little bit, but we can assign incorrect reasoning for things that happen and blame ourselves or think that we have control or don't have control. And I think all of that is involved in what we're talking about here. All of that feeds disorders. Or, like Zach said, if you understand yourself and the way you feel and the thoughts you have, it can help you drive productivity, just the opposite.
Yeah, I think that's super powerful. Context, I need to say, again, if you work in a setting, in a mental health setting, you have a very different experience of these things we're talking about. And I'm not talking about that type of job. Just like you talk to a police officer about crime going on, they're going to have a very different interpretation of it. It's going to be much more dangerous to them because that's their job. They constantly are around that stuff. So I'm trying to speak to what I would call more of just our normal audience. There you go, normal audience. Just folks just going through your daily life. If you're in the field of mental health or you're a psychologist or a psychiatrist, clearly you have different understandings of these things. And at a much more substantive level, great. I just want Tom or Sally or Muhammad going to their job on a daily basis to think a little differently about their psychology, about, as you call them, their quirks or their warts, and be like, how can I reframe that for myself and use it as energy in a good way?
One thing that when you were talking about that I thought would probably be important to call out would be, like we said, people have disorders all the time. A majority of people do, right? And Zach was saying, I'm not talking about in the clinical setting. Well, how much responsibility do those clinicians need to take for being the ones that manifest some of this shit? Like,
well, of course,
you know, it's just like if you're looking for something, you're going to see it. Yep. Right. And if it's your job to diagnose disorder and someone comes into your office, you're going to see some shit. You're going to diagnose
it. Don't ask the barber if you need a haircut.
Now, was that actually a disorder that was going to cause a problem with their functioning in society or not? I think there should probably be some bar there as a clinician to like really be like, okay, so clearly I can see some elements of X or I can see some elements of Y. But, you know, just like we said, most people are going to have elements of stuff where they could be diagnosed with something. The bar should, in my opinion, be, all right, well, before I'm going to go out of my way to diagnose them, tell them there's something wrong with them and plant that idea in their head and then require treatment, yeah, and maybe medication, like, shouldn't the bar be, I think that this is actually going to impact their functioning in society and be a negative impact to the world, you know? Yeah. Not just, I saw some traits, I'm diagnosed.
Well, that's why the key is the trust between the clinician or the expert and the patient, if you will, at that point. You've got to be able to find someone that will shoot you straight and, you know, give you what you need to hear to help you get better and function in society. And maybe that's not you're diagnosed with XYZ. Maybe it's just talking through things. And yeah, I see this on a spectrum and there's issues here, but let's figure out how to deal with them. And I think there's great psychologists and psychiatrists out there, and there's a real bunch of shit bums that want to keep you dependent on them.
Yeah.
But not all of them.
Yeah,
the guy I go to is definitely not that way. He's like, I know I'm doing a better job when I don't talk to you for long periods of time.
Yeah, I wanted to use you're right. You are exactly right. I thought a good analogy for this would be like you get pulled over for going 3 miles an hour over the speed limit, you know, and the cop comes up and he's like, so you realize you were breaking the law there. And you're just like, well, I guess technically I was, right? Or you rolled a stop sign, you know. You're breaking the law. Well, I was really just trying to turn right, and there was no one around for miles, right? Like, clearly not a problem. No problems were being caused. It's the same thing. Like, well, I'm writing you a ticket. I'm diagnosing you with this problem. It's like, as long as there's no problem being caused, then then what's the big deal? Just like what you were talking about, there are some really good – I would think it would be a really good sign of a psychologist if they said that exactly to you. They said, I see some elements of this, you know. However, I think it's relatively mild. Like, let's continue to talk about it and just make you aware of it.
There's plenty of people out there like that.
Yeah.
With the whole woke society we live in and identity politics and everybody just needing to focus on themselves at all times – I'd love to see that movement really shift to the DSM. Let's tear that apart. Let's look at how terrible – let's look at all those studies that created this. How many people did we look at to make all of these diagnostical statements? Like, I'm interested in all that. I'm not going to take the time to go do that myself, but I would love to see that try to occur. Like, okay, this disorder, how many people have we looked at? Like, where is this coming from? And obviously they have studies. That's what they do. But I also know how methodology works. We get a data set, and if there are outliers, they cut them from the data set. They actually remove them from the data set, which is Taleb's whole problem with statistics in the field of psychology in general, is they skew it to a bell curve math, which they get rid of the fat curves because they say those are outliers. Yeah, the outliers would change the whole goddamn data set. That's why you'd leave them in. As part of methodology in psychology, they get rid of the outliers from the beginning.
Yeah.
That's a huge deal, and no, people don't understand that.
That's a totally huge deal, yeah.
But again, if you're in the business of diagnosing, like, it's better for business if you do it that way.
Yeah.
All I know is I am definitely a nutty person in the head with a lot of things, but I think I've trained myself on how to use those shadows as productively as possible. Clearly – not perfectly. That's an issue. Nobody can be perfect. That's a ideal, not a fact or an outcome. But I just think the thinking about how to turn negatives into positives is useful if you're not a Ted Bundy type person.
What about so you talked about a couple, you said the word woke, which made me think about identity.
Yeah. That's what that's all about.
And then you even followed it up just now by saying, I'm a nutty person, but I definitely can use it. You had positive associations with it.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm pretty self-aware, almost to a debilitating point where I do too much self-analysis.
So, I mean, again, I would think there's probably a fine line between someone who would say, I'm definitely self-aware and I understand the problems I have and why they're holding me back. Right? So negative. Same thing. I'm a nutty person and I just got these problems and they hold me back in certain areas. Versus what you said, right? I'm a nutty person. I think a little bit off, and I just use it to my advantage. What a fine line, right?
Yeah, no, it is a fine. And I don't want to make it seem like I do that all the time. Clearly, I go beyond. I struggle with anger. So something happens to me in a car. That guy cuts me off. I'm going to kill that motherfucker. Like, and I used to years ago really take that fantasy far and visualize deep on that. Now it's just like, idiot. Like, I don't even react because I don't need him to waste my energy or my brain power on him. But that's an abnormal psychology when you take that fantasy and you go deep. That's one of the things I've learned. Is it bad to really think, oh, I wanted to kill that guy? No, of course. How long did you entertain the idea? Did you spend an hour thinking about it? And did you go buy a Bowie night? Like,
yeah. Well, my point about that is how much of this is actually part of your identity? That's one question I want to talk about. And then I want to talk about the transient nature of this over time, because you just introduced that as well. I used to, but now I.
Quitting drinking really helped change my psychology. So I've gotten a lot of clarity in those 3 years, 9 months since I've been sober. And it's not all positive clarity. Some of the things that I recognize in myself, I'm like, oh, damn, you need to get this changed soon or you're going to hurt yourself or people that love you if you don't take care of these thought patterns. But you should be evolving at all times. We are. We're all constantly physically evolving, but so is our mental game. In theory, you should gain more stability as you get older with the experiences you gain, and you get less sharp. You move towards the mean. You move from the edges to the middle. It becomes less about discovery, excitement, risk-taking, and more about preserving what I have. And that has an effect on our psychology. And I see that with our friends and how their families and what they want to do versus what they don't want to do. And
it's You're so right. You're so right.
Yeah, that's psychology. So then the one friend that
totally making this up, that travels more on his or her own, even though they have a family, or does the things that a normal person our age with a family wouldn't do, they get shit on in private by other people because they have an abnormal psychology.
Yeah, that makes total sense. One of the things that made me think about was, because we're talking about over time, we're talking about, you know, is this a part of your identity? The time aspect of it seems interesting to me because I feel like when I was younger, I was obviously less self-aware, but I had more highs and lows, right? Like joys were higher and depressions were lower.
Peaks and valleys.
And one of the powers, I think, that's been good, but I also want to talk about the opposite of it, about everything we do with Life Lab, everything that we do with reading books about stoicism, doing our daily journal. And I was thinking about this yesterday, you know, like we were hanging out in my backyard, right? And a lot of stuff happened, a lot of conversations happened. And I was paying attention to my own reactions and emotions about them. And I feel like it was all really muted. And then I was like, man, I feel like I am really muted, you know, lately. Like I feel like I'm...
You're a rock that used to have sharper edges and the water's washing over you constantly and now you're becoming more of a rounded stone.
Yeah, and thinking about it with my identity, thinking, man, I miss...
Well, give an example from last night.
We had a set of string lights and dogs ran into them and they fell right onto the table, right on Kizzy as she was eating. A couple of them broke, right? And made a big popping sound. Everyone was scared. I had to run over and unplug them because obviously don't want anyone to get shocked. But my reaction to it, once I realized what had happened, right? I just went and I picked the pole up and I stuck it back in the ground, saw that two light bulbs were broken, helped clean up and moved on. No, my emotions on that was just like a little bit of surprise to figure out what was happened. And then, okay, let's put the pole back up and make sure everything, you know what I mean? Like
and you're saying that's a good thing or a bad thing?
No, it's just an example of where my reactions as I've gotten older, as I've done the practices and all this stuff, are just – they're so much more muted.
I would say that's a positive
one. Okay, well, like, I've got a better one.
Because you didn't – what people would do, the unmuting that would be to insert all kinds of anxiety and panic and to make that a much bigger deal than it was. I thought your reaction was great. It was like a first responder reaction. Whoa, that was scary. What happened? Everybody okay? Walk over, put the pole up, put the lights up, get back to business. Like, to me, it was textbook great reaction.
Okay, so that's one. Let me give you another one.
Now, we are suing you because my wife ate glass, Dave.
I know. We've already received your letter from your lawyer.
Cease and desist.
Here's another one. All right. And this is I think both of those are good examples, but this will be one that I think we can talk about. Like, okay, is that a positive? Is that a negative? You admitted to me or informed me.
Admitted. This doesn't sound good.
That when you're hanging out with our other friend group.
Oh, yes.
That anytime something comes up with a homeless person, there's a running joke that I hate homeless people. And I think if you listen to all the Life Labs, probably in the beginning few episodes, because I think we did talk about homelessness at some point in time, right? And so there's a running joke that I hate homeless people. And Zach was like, just so you know, whenever we're hanging out and anybody sees a homeless dude, people will make a joke like, oh, Dave would really hate that guy, blah, 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 right? So first of all, disclaimer, I don't hate homeless people.
Yes. He's just tired of getting hounded in Denver.
Yeah, which is nonstop. I've experienced homelessness in the city a lot, and I just think I have strong opinions about how I do think homeless people should be served. Talking about mental disorders here,
yeah,
right?
Oh, 100%.
That's generally how people end up that way, and I do believe that we should be compassionate as a society. They should get services. I just think it should be done in a way that's different from the way that we do it.
Good.
Now.
He disagrees with homeless policy. So
that's it.
So you
that's
learned it. Though so, that our friends so, poke fun.
So I learned
behind
that our
back.
Friends think that I hate homeless people and make fun of me. Right? When I was younger, that would have bothered me. I would have gotten upset about that.
Yeah, you would have. You would have.
I don't give a shit.
That's emotional maturity. That's not muting. See, how you define muting, to me, that's a negative term, muting. Mute yourself. Repress your feelings. That's what I hear when I hear
that
word.
Okay, okay.
I hear, no, that's emotional maturity. Just let that slide off. That's your guys' stuff, not me, because that's not how I feel, and I'm comfortable with how I feel about it. And for us, it's just a goofy joke, because obviously we don't think those things, but now it's just like the running gag that somebody's got to say it.
Well, it's and it's one of those things that was like, here was my progression of thought. Okay, they say that. Am I upset about that? No, I don't care. That's number one. Number two, what else do they say?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Clearly, people talk about you behind your back, and everyone, you know, you think they're your friends, and they are, you know, but you have your quirks. Everyone notices your quirks, and then they talk about them, and they probably amplify them
in their own little groups. That's funny, because when I was sharing that with you, younger Zach would have been very concerned, and actually probably, I'm sure at some point I talked to my friends and been like, you know, when I'm not around, what do you guys talk about me? That would have concerned me a lot. That's anxiety. That's insecurity. That's neurosis. So it's funny you bring that up. Great point. Abnormal psychology. The normal thing is when I'm sharing that with Dave, my brain, one thing going on in the back of it was, I wonder what they say about me when I'm not around. And then instantly, the muting of that, or what I'd call emotional psychological evolution and maturity, was, who fucking cares? They're your buddies. It doesn't matter. They're poking fun just like we are with Dave. And I let it go. 20 years ago, I would have had to talk about it. Like, that would have become an important thing. I would have made it about me.
Yeah, and you would have been like, you. What else do they say? I would have done that too.
Right.
I think it goes back to what we're talking about. When I mentioned the serenity prayer and control, I would want to control what it is that they say about me when I'm not there.
You guys can't talk about that when I'm
not
there.
What else do they say? Because, well, or even like, if I find out what they think my quirks are and they amplify, even if I don't think that they're true, I'll work hard to
go against
that. I'm going to start
an anti-homelessness organization.
Exactly, exactly.
Right? I need to prove them wrong.
Exactly.
But doing it that way, I view that's using that thing, that quirk that somebody's obviously manipulating the quirk there, and using it for good. Taking that insecurity and putting real good positive action in the world. That's where I think good fuel can come from.
It can. But if we're talking about from the context of emotional stability,
correct.
You use the word insecurity. So what's
that would be a big insecurity.
Yep. Right. I should help homeless people just because I'm a good person.
Or just because it's the right thing to do.
Right. Not because I have an insecurity, but correct. That my friends called out.
You are correct. Right. I would agree with that.
Right. Okay. So that's what I'm saying. So when we're talking about this whole like emotional maturity, mental stability.
Psychological evolution.
Yeah. So I guess here's another thing. Is emotional stability and mental order, are those one and the same?
That could be a whole nother life lab. Emotional stability and mental what was the word?
Order.
Gut reaction, I haven't had time to think through it, is they're definitely related. I wouldn't call them synonymous.
Right, I agree.
Yeah. I would say that mental order for me, I don't know, because my brain's already making arguments both ways. At first, I wanted to say mental order is the umbrella term. Emotional stability is a foundation that helps hold the umbrella up. But then I could see it flip the other way, too.
Yeah.
Mental order is the foundation that gives you emotional stability. So I don't know. I'd have to think through that. It's a good question.
Yeah, when I think about it over time, what I think is crazy, and it's something to call out, is how when I was young, right, and this is even exacerbated in children, responses are extremes, right? Like we watched Dylan and Marin, and I don't know exactly what the exchange was, but Dylan just hit Marin. Just like, all right, I'm hitting her. Bam, right? Like not holding back. Clearly, that will mute as he becomes an adult.
He was practicing my utopia where everybody gets one jab a day to somebody. He knew what Uncle Zach's utopia was.
So when he's an adult, a similar situation will happen, and he will not hit the woman standing in front of him.
That's impulse control.
Right.
And that's – so then we can tie that into abnormal psychology on the negative side. If someone doesn't learn over time impulse control, either because their genetics doesn't allow them to or they're not choosing to or both, that's an abnormal psychology that'll bite you in the butt real quick. having no impulse control.
Oh, yeah.
Or sporadic, unstable impulse control. But most people naturally get more of that over time. But then substances alter that.
Two things. Substances alter that, put a pin in that, but you also then lose it over time. So it's like you're a child, right? And you have wild ups and downs. And then you get to about midlife, and assuming that you have, you know, progressed, right? You've gained, like, you become more stable, like you and I are talking about. But then as you get older and you start to lose cognitive ability, those things become reintroduced.
Yes, yes, yeah, I see what you mean. Like, old age.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah, like, absolutely.
And I,
well, it's all cyclical.
Yeah.
You become a baby again.
Yeah, which is like the whole, that's why I'm talking about this as related to identity. Some people carry this thing throughout their whole life, and they just are like, well, that's just me. That's just me. And it's like, well, if you bring it with you, if you keep manifesting it, if you keep acting it out.
Drop the rock. You're carrying the rock. Yeah. You know, I'm looking at this piece of paper behind you, and it's life paths. Like, draw a line, a vertical line. That's today. And then just draw 100 paths in different directions moving out. That's tomorrow.
Yeah.
We choose to hold on to certain connotations of our psychology and who we are and view ourselves and talk about. Basically, it goes back to storytelling. Like, what's your story? What's the story of your psychology? How can you reframe it to take those weird aspects of yourself and use them as juice, man, as Red Bull, outside of extremes?
Yeah.
Seek help if clearly you – I think the phrase – I'm powerless over X trait and my life has become unmanageable. If those two things, you can insert some issue happening in your life and it's tied to psychology there, then yeah, you need to seek help. If you have a constant obsessive thought that you can't get rid of, go talk to someone.
Yeah.
Or you're depressed.
That totally
you can't. You don't want to get out of bed. You want to commit suicide. You need to go talk to someone. You can't just do nothing. And you can't take depression and make it fuel. It can become fuel over time, but you have to think about how you do depression. How do you do depression?
This is awesome. I think this is awesome because it takes it back to when we were talking about a clinician doing a diagnosis. You said, and my life is unmanageable, right? So I'm powerless over this, and my life is unmanageable.
Right.
That's a clear way. Like, those two things. If I look at any one thing where I'm like, oh, man, I'm drinking too much coffee. I have a caffeine addiction, right? Like, I feel like I don't have the power over that situation that I would typically want to. And what is the result of that? Like, well, I just drink a lot of coffee.
Right.
And
your life's still manageable.
My life is still manageable. So, right.
And you're not dying from it.
Right. Exactly. You know, so, okay. So then I get to decide, do I want to do something about that or not? You know what I mean? It's not urgent versus what you said, right?
Like, well, I don't want to take credit. That's the first step one in AA.
Okay.
I'm powerless over alcohol and my life has become unmanageable.
Okay.
Until someone's willing to admit that and you – that's the first – you have to take that step and only you can decide that, whether it's alcohol or anything. Like, this crazy thought I have about my neighbor, I can't get it out of my head or
– yeah, yeah. So step one, before you can ever do that, you have to become self-aware, right? So we're assuming self-awareness there. But I think that's fair to
and
do
sometimes
in this
you
exercise.
Can come to that on your own, or sometimes somebody else hits you in a sledgehammer over the head, but you can still gain self-awareness that way. It's less pleasant, but it can happen.
Yep. So, but with that exercise, I think we're assuming self-awareness. And so I think that's going to be my change challenge. I think my change challenge is going to say, assuming self-awareness, can you think about things in your life that are pronounced, right? Whether it be drinking too much coffee, alcohol, having a hard time sleeping.
Things that you do in excess that happen a lot.
Yes. Thoughts that you – things that stick out to you as maybe being problematic, right? And then – apply that standard, right? Like, do I feel powerless over that thing and to how much? And how much is it impacting the manageability of my life?
Nice. I like it.
And then decide what you're going to do about those that you think are borderline problematic.
Hopefully you'll take action.
Yeah.
Bruno Mars, Abnormal Psychology. When he was coming up, he's a very talented musician and comes from a very talented musical family. And one of his strengths now that the music industry tried to cure him of was his, quote,
unorthodox approach to music. Because, well, what are you? Are you a rapper? Are you an R&B artist? Are you a jazz artist? He could do Latin influence. There was a lot of different genres that he was building, and the old rich white men running the record labels didn't know what to label him. And so he recalls vividly, he was young. I don't even know if he was 20, 19, 20, young person. And he's in there in the meeting describing this, and they're like, they said, you know, you're unorthodox. We don't know what you are. We don't know who to market you to. Like, we don't know how this is going to work. So what did he do? He took what could have been a very negative conversation, and you know, that could be a deep wound for someone, and he labeled his next album Unorthodox Jukebox, and that's his best-selling album of all time. He said, fuck you. Not only is this not a negative thing, this is who I am, and it's different than everything else out there, and I'm going to do it on my own. And they did, and the record company missed out on that. That's what I mean about fuel. Like, we can take any comment or question that someone gives us, and we infuse it through our own identity lenses. It becomes what we want it to be based on who we are. You like to say we project ourselves when we're looking out. So that could have been a wound, but he used it to become a strength.
I will say, I love that story. That is a powerful story, and I'm not detracting from it. But I want to call out something that we talked about earlier, which was being somewhere in the median. Like, extremes, that story won't work for extremes, correct, right? So if you are a black metal polka singer, mm-hmm. you're not going to have the Bruno Mars thing happen to you.
Well, you won't.
The record industry
won't become popular famous that way. But I guarantee if you start your heavy metal polka YouTube channel, you will find your niche people guaranteed.
Yep. I'm just calling out the extremes.
No, I agree. Well, here's another one. Classical violinist who wanted to infuse it with techno. What are you doing? You can't do that. Nope. Now she's a mega millionaire. She has her. It's, to me, it's like nowadays, it's all about the blends and the infusions. It's about doing the thing that people say, no, you can't do that. That's not normal.
Yeah. So I think the point that you're talking about is understanding your abnormalities, right? Understanding your psychological abnormalities and determining, okay, is this manageable? Can I make this a productive thing?
Yes.
And then leveraging it.
Yes. To me, it's what one of the things that made Family Guy really powerful. And at the psychological level that people, you know, outside of just goofy humor in the show, they use what's called a pattern interrupt. And they didn't invent it, I'm sure, but they popularized it. Now, all kinds of other shows use it. Family Guy made it the thing. That is when Peter's telling a story, and then it cuts away and goes to the story, and they'll do it for like 5 full minutes. And then you forget that that's not the main storyline, and then they go back to the real story. They interrupt the pattern. There's a psychological thing going on. And when you can master the pattern interrupt, to me, that's where you can really infuse potential negative connotations of psychology with real positive ones. But that takes thought, strategy, planning, self-awareness. But the best speakers, the best communicators, they have mastered pattern interrupt. And they use cursing as part of that usually.
That's the best analogy you could have given. Because I just think speaking and all that aside, we could talk about that. Comedy is a master of using quirkiness, abnormality, and giving it a positive
as your superpower.
Something
as dumb as eating, what was Jim Gaffigan's, Hot Pockets. Like, it can be anything that you do to an excess, but you put the comedic lens over it. Now, of course, not everything's funny. You don't get to determine what's funny. Your audience does. And the sensitivities in society are quite heightened. But it ain't like comedians aren't doing stuff today. They still are. And so that's where you can get and be playful. To me, it's about playfulness. It's really about theory. Theories are fun because it hasn't occurred. It's ideas. You should be able to play with ideas. And our psychology is nothing but ideas and beliefs about ourselves. And so if you get a little more theoretical and playful with it, it's like, well, what do people consider good or bad? Well, why? How can I change that? How can I reframe that? How can I make this wart or this quirk cool and me? I don't know.
I like
That's where my brain goes.
I like it because comedy, in the terms of what we're talking about, can give you relief.
Well, comedy and tragedy are two sides of the same coin. Our whole existence is a tragedy.
Yeah.
We die. We know we're going to die. We better find some damn comedy in that
Exactly.
While we're alive.
Exactly. And it's not – and taking it to abnormal psychology, right? Like, you're going to have some weird shit about you. Like, that's just the way it is. Quit taking yourself so damn seriously, right? Like, if you don't laugh about – what's the saying? If you don't – if you're not – if I wasn't laughing, I'd be crying, right? Yep. And that's exactly what we're talking about here, which is laugh. Choose to laugh.
Yeah. So I don't have anything else other than my change challenge. Do you have any other thoughts you wanted to hit on? If you feel free to do so.
No, I'll just wrap it up by saying this one was way better than I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. I didn't take a ton of notes and like abnormal psychology. That's what are we even going to talk about?
Well, yeah.
I liked it. It was a good one.
I think both of our main points was to cultivate your abnormal psychology, take back the positivity from it, find humor in it, make it goofy, make it you, make it work for you, but realize there are very serious psychological abnormalities that are important that you need to seek help from. We're not taking away from any of that. That wasn't our lens.
Yeah.
So Dave had a solid change challenge, assuming self-awareness. Think about the things in your life that are problematic and apply that guideline of I'm powerless over X. Is my life unmanageable? And if you don't come up with anything, great. But if you do, then natural next step, what can you do about it? Do you want to do something about it? Mine is just simply, where can you go against the grain, right? Not cultivate some new aspect of yourself, but like who you already are. Where are you going against the norm of what other people do, whether it's society in general or your family or your friends? But how does that serve you and others well at the same time? If by going against the grain, it only serves you, you know, sort of economic, homo economicus, rational self-interest, that's not what I'm talking about. It needs to serve others as well, especially those you love. So I just say take back some of those aspects of your personality that where people tell you that's not good. That's on page 894 of the DSM. You're crazy, man. And embrace your crazy.
So good.
Nice. Well, as we say at Life Lab, experiment with life.